Heroin, fentanyl, carfentanil. They are deadly drugs. Anyone who uses these opioids knows the risks, and they point out that won't stop them from using. It just demonstrates how powerful the addiction is. Then add in the fact that withdrawal is painful and incredibly hard to do if you're living on the streets scrounging for food and trying to scrape together the $25 to $35 a day you need to support your habit. In BC, hydromorphone is available to a limited number of chronic heroin users. The Salome and Naomi trials provided evidence that treatment is effective in stabilizing users. The BC Centre for Substance Use recently issued guidelines that are a continuum of care that include counseling, detox, withdrawal management services, and the administration of injectable and oral treatment through medication. Colin Ross has been an addict for about 20 years. Now he's receiving hydromorphone 2 times a day, a treatment he says allows him to stabilize and consider his future. We sat down with Colin for a conversation that matters about the opioid crisis, the hydromorphone IV treatment program, mental health, housing, and the potential he hopes to realize.
Conversations That Matter is a partner program for the Center for Dialogue at Simon Fraser University. The production of this program is made possible thanks to the support of the following and viewers like you.
Colin Ross, welcome to Conversations That Matter.
All right, thanks for having me.
We're in the midst of a fentanyl crisis. More than 1,000 people have died already this year. You have been caught up in this. Tell me a little bit about your life, your relationship with street drugs, and now being on the hydromorphone IV treatment plan, and why that's so important.
Addiction's been a part of my life for, I started using, the lesser drugs, marijuana and mushrooms and stuff, probably around the age of 11, 12 years old. I've been a heroin addict for, the first time I used heroin, I was 16. But it wasn't prevalent. I moved back to Alberta, it wasn't around. But I've been physically dependent on heroin for probably about 10 years now.
And that puts you into that category of being a chronic user, which in essence means that you're going to need some kind of assistance for the rest of your life.
Not necessarily the rest of my life. For myself, if I'm honest with myself, there's a good chance, yeah, but I could always, I can always quit. Mm-hmm. But that's a huge task in its own. Drug use, like I say, has been a part of my life for my whole life. But with the physical dependency, if I were to not use today, I would get very sick. I would, it mimics the flu, except it's a lot worse. There's a big anxiety, in worst cases, puking, soiling yourself, chills, fever,
headaches,
yeah, yeah. Of severe anxiety. It's really brutal. It's what we call dope sick.
It's painful.
Yeah, and actually anybody who's been on, morphine or anything for surgery, using daily for usually takes about 3-4 days of continued use.
That's it? Only 3 or 4 days?
Yeah, and that's when you're not going to feel severely sick, though. Like, the really bad sickness comes from the long-term chronic user.
Right, and so, but it's that, I guess your body adapts to it so quickly that without it, you start to go through withdrawal.
Yeah, it's, and like I say, at 3-4 days, that would be fairly minor, chills, maybe some, sweats, hot, cold, but discomfort for sure. Someone like myself, and I actually, as far as a user goes, I've always had a fairly small habit. That's actually what made me fall in love with opiates, is I have severe anxiety issues. Mm-hmm. And addiction issues. I was a raging alcoholic for many years. And when I started using opiates, it's the first thing where I'd use a small amount and be good with that. I wouldn't want to just keep going and going and going. But unfortunately, that's the double-edged sword, is now I have to, it's the one thing where I use it and I have to use, regularly.
Why? What happens to you when you don't?
I get really sick. If I got over the physical dependency, I've gone through detox quite a few times. Mm-hmm. I've detoxed at home, quit cold turkey. I've done the methadone program. So I've gotten through that stage where I was not using at all and was past. It's usually, you know, a week to 2 weeks of sickness. You know, and even now where, you know, I've been dealing with this my whole life, and now I'm actually in a place where I've kind of learned how to manage things, and through supportive programs and such, you know, I'm dealing with it as the best I ever have. I'm come to terms, maybe, for lack of a better word.
It must be pretty scary out there right now, though, because, you know, we had Dr. Evan Wood on talking about, you know, why have we moved towards fentanyl? And he basically says it's the microization or the nanotechnology of making it harder to detect and easier to transport that has brought about, you know, this move from heroin to fentanyl. But fentanyl, it appears to be such a terrifying alternative, and yet people are using it. How come?
When you go into like the Insight witness injection place, the first thing they do is ask you what you're using. Mm-hmm. And I my reply is always, your guess is as good as mine. You know, you hope wow. It's, you know, it's you know, when you're buying what we call down, you know it's going to be a downer. Well, you hope anyways, but that's the risky thing with drug use is from wherever it's made in another country to by the time it gets into my possession, it's gone through countless people's hands. People you don't know, people that maybe they don't even know what they're doing. It could be cut with anything from baby laxative to you know, other drugs. It is very risky, which goes to show you how powerful addiction is, because, you know, it's when you get to that point, that's not a concern. You know, you're just trying to make yourself feel better.
And that's the key point, isn't it? You're trying to make yourself feel better.
There's definitely the euphoric aspect to it, you know, like there's a side of me that uses drugs because, well, yeah, you know, it makes me feel good. But the main, like, especially with the opiates, the main reason I say I fell in love with it is because it's one of the first times in my life I've actually kind of felt normal. I feel comfortable in my own skin. You know, there's a lot of benefits to using. It's like, we wouldn't do it if it was nothing but pain and misery, you know? Like, yeah.
But right now it comes with great risk. Have you been in a position where you have used fentanyl and been, you know, on the cusp of death?
I use small amounts. I use alone a lot of the time, so I always test my drugs, like do a sample.
How do you do that?
Well, I inject my drugs. So say I bought like a quarter gram, which for me is, you know, a couple of hits. I would do a small one around somebody, or, you know, just like a tester to make sure, especially nowadays. But, you know, heroin overdose has been an issue for many, many years. It's just now with the fentanyl being so strong that it's become the big thing. But yeah, so I've always been really responsible, but I never have really come close to overdosing. Because I've been smart about it. I use supervised and stuff for my first use.
As in, you'll use one of the safe injection sites?
Yeah, or be around friends, you know, people that at the very least will call 911. But now it's pretty common to have naloxone, which counteracts opiate overdose.
But have you ever had to use that?
Twice, actually. But having said, like,
well,
all the safety
thankfully it was
things,
handy, otherwise we wouldn't be having this interview.
Totally. But just shortly before I got into this prescribed hydromorphone program,
right,
I did half of a what we call a 10 paper, which is the smallest amount you can buy on the streets. It's, for most users, just enough to make you not feel sick. It's a small, it's like the equivalent of having one drink kind of deal if you're somebody who likes to have six or seven. And I did half of that, so $5 worth, which was my tester, my sample shot, and I woke up in an ambulance. I had overdosed, which for me, like, I don't have a huge habit, but if it was actual heroin, it would take me at least $25 to $30 worth to even come close to overdosing. Like,
wow.
Yeah, it's a 10 paper is less than a point of a gram.
So you're now on the hydromorphone IV treatment program. How long have you been doing that?
Time flies. It's been close to 6 months now, I think.
And how has that changed your life?
It's been major. For one, my safety level is there. Like, the overdosing was a you know, not, I don't want to say a wake-up call because I've always known the risks there, but it was really scary to think of, you know, I have a relationship with my family the past few years, and yeah, to think of what it could have done to them. But so yeah, this program, for starters, has taken that risk away from me. For second, I don't have to spend, like when you're addicted to opiates, it's a monkey on your back. You know that you're gonna get sick. You have to come up with that money every day. I'm honest, I don't steal, I don't shoplift or anything. So, you know, there's the cost of living. But on top of that, I have to come up with $20 to $30 minimum every day just to not be sick. So it's like this constant, even when you have money, you know that that's not gonna last that long. You know, it's constantly, how am I gonna come up with money to feed my habit? So that has disappeared. I know that I go to the pharmacy and my shot is there. I've bought street drugs like 3 or 4 times in the 6 months that I started this program.
And is your tendency to do that diminishing now?
Oh, big time.
Yeah.
For a few reasons. One, the safety issue. Financial is another thing. But things have stabilized big time. Like that's one thing without this program, sometimes you can't come up with money. So you're dope sick. It's extremely hard to function. You know, you can't do anything really. Like even when I was homeless, I curled up in a ball on the sidewalk, you know, feeling like I'm. So that really affects your ability to commit to anything.
Uh-huh.
So now with this program, like I say, I don't have to worry about being sick. I just have to worry about making it to the pharmacy.
In your working career, you've worked in the restaurant sector as a chef and in the kitchen. Are you able now to return to working as a result of being on the program?
I could go back to work right now, but I think it would, right now it's a key time in my life where, you know, I have the ability to start making some lasting changes. I've made a lot of changes in the past, but you know, they haven't lasted. So it's kind of like, you know, wait till you're ready, wait till you have everything.
Right.
Like I could do it now, but I think my chances and my percentage of my success rate goes up big time if I spend a little bit more time. You know, 6 months is a long time, but it's not a long time. Like I'm 37 years old. Like I say, I started using drugs of one forms. It's been, you know,
24 years.
Totally. Yeah. And even 10 years on heroin, that's not going to change overnight, you know? Especially like there's just the physical aspect alone of it. I was on methadone for a long time, which, you know, in the past has been one of our main go-to things in the healthcare industry. And methadone was horrible. I was so depressed. And coming off of methadone, heroin withdrawal is 1 to 2 weeks. Methadone withdrawal lasted me like 6 weeks. It was horrible. So, you know, thinking on that terms, like, yeah, there's just getting over the physical dependency, there's retraining my life, getting used to having some steady time. This is one of the first times in many years where I can look past today or tomorrow.
So mental health is an issue that many people who are users are also struggling with. When we take a look at our mental health programs, how have they contributed to the challenges that many of the people who are, especially here in the downtown east side, are facing?
By programs, what are you thinking?
Well, you know, I did an interview a few years ago with former police chief Jim Chu, who said, you know, we watch people fall through the cracks. They, you know, they have an issue where they're aggressive or they're unresponsive. And the next thing you know, they're told, well, you're no longer welcome in this house. You have to go somewhere else. And then somehow they don't get into that next place and they start to slide through the system. They get lost. And who's waiting for them? Your neighborhood drug dealer. So, you know, when we look at that whole system right now, from your perspective, does it need to be revisited?
The options for treatment have been very little. Medication is just take medication, maybe some counseling. Programs were extremely short is one of the things. All the things that I've done in my life, many of the things. Like, you know, I've taken treatment for addiction, gone and seen psychiatrists. I've been seeing psychiatrists since grade one, grade two. You know, any program seemed to be a month to 3 month program, you know, and like, especially at my age now, you're kind of expected to change a lifetime of habits and learn how to deal, like dealing with mental illness is a major, major task. Yeah. It's, you know, it's trying to change the way your brain works. You know, like, brain's a pretty complex thing.
That's right. And even somebody who has access to a more sort of internal resources, changing the way they do things takes a lot of work and a lot of time.
That's exactly it. I'm quite fortunate to have, like, my housing. This is a kind of a different issue altogether, but my housing was long-term. I got into a program. I have a doctor who's amazing. I can't say enough good things about my doctor, who has really, since day one, I know he's in for the long haul with me. He knows mental health, he knows addiction. So I've been quite lucky to have a lot of good supports. I've been doing a lot of advocacy work and stuff for addiction and mental health and homelessness as well, which has helped me a lot to openly speak about these issues, to drop shame and all that.
So you also talked about having access to housing. You've been fortunate to have that. How important is that for anybody who is, well, for all of us? It's almost a redundant question. Like, without it, you don't stand a chance, do you?
Yeah, the study I was in actually supposedly has changed Canada's national housing policy, homeless policy, is housing first, they call it. In the past, housing has almost been a reward. For someone in my situation, housing has almost been a reward for getting clean, dealing with your mental health, and getting a job. Then you get a home, you know, it's which really, when you look at, you know, really what should be our fundamental rights, housing is one of the tops. You know, it's up there with food. Well, they say food and shelter. Just dealing with day-to-day life when you're homeless is ridiculous. I say to people who have never been homeless, like, have you ever forgot your keys and been locked out of your building for 3-4 hours after work? You know, like that, what do I do? Where do I go? Especially if you don't have your wallet with you. Yeah, think of that all day, every day, and stretching out in front of you for God knows how long. Like, trying to do anything. You can't own anything when you're homeless. Everything gets stolen, or you have to carry everything with you constantly. You know, so a lot of times you're brought down to one change of clothing. You know, maybe some toiletries. If you're sleeping outside, you're getting woken up by security, police, you're getting pushed away by everybody.
So you're tired, you're weak, you're hungry, it's everything.
Totally, you know, there's a lot of supports in Vancouver for homeless people, a lot of free food and such, but people don't realize, like, I stayed in a shelter a lot of the time because I got sick of, I got woken up one time by security. I had my blanket over me, and he went to kick me awake, and he kicked me in the head, actually. He didn't intend to kick me in the head, but I was woken up by a security guard kicking me in the head. So finally I just was like, okay, screw this, I'm going to shelters. But to get 3 meals a day and get in a bed in a shelter, 4 to 6 hours a day waiting in line. So, you know, 6 hours a day waiting in line to get food and a place to sleep. That's a full-time job right there.
How about recovery programs? What role do you think that they're going to play, especially if we're able to start to shift the way that we're looking at providing people with services to help people stabilize?
It's really important. Like, I'm at a stage, you know, now for the first time in many years, I'm starting to think, do I want to get these drugs completely out of my life? But for many years, I haven't wanted to be clean. But to have these options there, most people just don't want to have to deal with it anymore. I personally strongly, like, if I were to change things the way I see them, would be harm reduction based, supported medication for drug users, and treatment always has to be, like, I personally say, to see really good success, I believe we have to really shift to a healthcare focused approach to addiction, and healthcare treatment is part of healthcare. You know, psychiatrists, or whatever it may be. And that's the other thing. We need to have a wide variety of options for people out there. Human beings are much different creatures, you know? Like, to have right. one thing that's going to work for an entire population of drug users, or, you know...
So, at your place on the continuum of all of this, do you see us moving to a healthcare-based focus on addressing this issue for individuals and all of us, because we're all involved?
Living in Vancouver, we're actually leading North America in a lot of ways in starting to have these shifts, to have, you know, insight. When the government was taking it to court, the Harper government trying to shut it down, that's where the Supreme Court finally told them, no, this is a health issue. The doctors and stuff in the city seem to, most of them are on board with this, the police department even. I've seen progress being made. We still have a long, long way to go. I think one of the main things that needs to shift is public opinion about who drug users are, what addiction is. You know, it's been seen as a moral flaw for many, many years. People are using drugs because they choose to be lazy, they don't want to, you know. And also working towards things that work, you know. We can throw people in jail and let them come back onto the streets, and they're more angry at society, they feel abandoned by society, they, you know, bad dealings with police, and then to put them back on the streets with no treatment, no housing. You know, it's to me, it's not a huge choice to want to continue just that downward spiral. And then you try to get help and there's no options,
right.
You know. So shifting towards this, I think people are seeing finally the results. Like, I know my life has improved quite a bit. I'm not currently working a 9-to-5 job, but I sit on the, I was a member of the Mayor's Task Force on Mental Health and Addictions. I'm now sitting on a People with Lived Experience Advisory Committee. I was in a play on the mental health industry a few years back.
So you're busy getting the word out.
Yeah.
Thank you ever so much for doing this. Unfortunately, we're out of time.
Thank you very much for having me. It's great. This is part of what's helping change it.